Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Pelican Bay State Prison in Northern California is one of the most infamous in the country. It was built in 1989 as a maximum security prison with nearly half the facility built for solitary confinement. It houses about 2,200 men. A few years after it opened, the 60 Minutes report highlighted excessive force by guards and a lawsuit exposed inadequate medical care. More recently, in 2013, a two-month hunger strike at Pelican Bay spread throughout California's prison system in protest of the excessive use of solitary confinement. Today, there's good news. Institutions of higher education are in the prisons offering educational pathways that disrupt the cycle of despair and violence and equip those who emerge as returning citizens with a college degree that can translate into living wage incomes and family stability. Joining the exchange are two guests from Cal Poly Humboldt who are leading a project that helps students at Pelican Bay earn a bachelor's degree. Maxwell Schnurr is a Cal Poly professor. Welcome, Maxwell.
Hello. Nice to meet you, Mike.
And Jen Capps is Cal Poly's provost and VP of academic affairs. Welcome, Jen.
Good morning. Nice to hear from you.
Well, Jen, let's start with you. Can you give us an overview and some background on Cal Poly's degree program at Pelican Bay?
Yeah, absolutely. So it really starts with a wonderful partnership with a community college that we have, the College of the Redwoods. The College of the Redwoods has been a great partner with Pelican Bay State Prison for quite some time, offering associate degrees there to the people who are incarcerated at the prison. And so due to the success of that program over the last several years, there's been a demand for offering a bachelor's program. So through our partnership with College of the Redwoods, we sought to offer a bachelor's program in communication there to allow the people who are incarcerated an opportunity to achieve that bachelor's degree. And so that work began a couple of years ago. And with respect to that partnership and developing that degree program with a number of partners. And I'm happy to say that last year, we were able to get that program off the ground in a pilot format with a full cohort of people in the degree program this fall.
When you talk about the cohort, how many are in the cohort and what are they working toward? And oh, by the way, the College of Redwoods degree was in what? What were the offerings there?
They have multiple degree pathways that they offer in lots of different areas. And so I believe social work and communication and business and lots of different offerings. And so with regard to the degree program that we offer a degree program in communication, bachelor's program. That's what we started out with. And really what we sought to do was a couple of things. We asked the people who are incarcerated what type of degree program they would be most interested in pursuing and what met their goals and their objectives. And that was one that they really thought would be meaningful to them, as well as what would be easy to partner with respect to the associate degrees that are offered at College of the Redwoods.
Okay. So, Maxwell, tell me about the day-to-day experience of the students at Pelican Bay who are enrolled in the degree program.
Oh, it's pretty fantastic. It's, in many ways, a regular college or university class, but the students are very driven. They're very interested in learning and have a lot of knowledge and experience that they bring to the table. And the classes are regular, sort of 3 or 4 unit upper division major classes generally with a few general education courses. And the students bring a phenomenal love of learning. And it's really, having taught for more than 20 years at universities, it's some of the most rewarding teaching I've ever done because the students are very much driven in the conversation. And I'll also say that the experiences that they bring, everybody in our program has earned their AA degrees beforehand. Several of them have multiples, but they all got their GEDs while they were in prison. And so their learning pathway is both unique and also really similar, if that makes sense.
So are you in the prison with these students, or are you doing this remotely?
Nope, we do everything face-to-face, and that's pretty important. As you named in the intro, Pelican Bay was really sort of tied to notions of isolation in its original conception. And the current administration there, and a lot of the students in the prison are really aware of the benefits of education. There are more than 300 students who are enrolled in community college classes at this point in Pelican Bay, and many of those courses are face-to-face. And we go with a full face-to-face cohort because we really think that some of the best professors that Cal Poly has in the room with these driven students is such a vital part of the actual educational pathway. And I think it's pretty engaging. But it you know, you ask about the sort of day to day, and it's you know, we have access to a classroom that looks, you know, like many others. There's a smart whiteboard that we can write on. The students get access to a limited research database. We're offering the exact same degree pathway with the exact same rigor and assignments that would happen in Arcata as they are in Crescent City.
My guests are Cal Poly Humboldt Professor Maxwell Schnurr and Jen Capps, who serves as Provost and VP of Academic Affairs. So, Jen, you mentioned the cohort. Can you tell me again how many are in this first cohort? And then give me a sense of the larger system and network and what you believe the measurable impact and benefits of this prison degree program would be.
Yeah, absolutely. And Maxwell probably has a better count on the exact number, but I think it's 22 to 24 students who are in this first cohort. And so really seeking to keep it small and manageable to start out before we expand it to be a broader group of students. There's a huge demand for students seeking to want to earn their bachelor's degree, as we mentioned. But the positive impact of this program is significant. You know, Cal Poly Humboldt's my main, you know, priority for the university is to create access to education. And sometimes creating access to education makes communities safer, happier, and healthier, and it makes families happier, healthier, and safer. And so that extends to prison environments as well. So extending education opportunities to people who are incarcerated actually reduces the level of violence that exists within prisons, gives people an opportunity to learn and to positively impact their lives, and to be able to then transfer that knowledge and that information to their families, to the next generation. And then for those that do eventually return to the community, the relationship between education, having access to education and earning degrees and recidivism is significant. So the more education you have and the more opportunities you have, the more likely you're going to be successful when you reenter the community. And to me, what I think people care most about, obviously, is that communities are safe and that people are healthy and happy.
And this is part of a larger degree program like Project Rebound?
Project Rebound is another program that we have. So at Cal Poly Humboldt, we have our Pelican Bay bachelor's program, but we also have Project Rebound, which is a program that many universities have, but it's a program that helps to support people after they have been incarcerated or justice involved, and help them to provide support as they enter college. So it's different, but related.
Okay. So let's back up and get a little bit of historical context in both your lives. Max, let's start with you. So Maxwell, what's your background and how'd you find your way into teaching in prison?
Well, I'm a professor of communication and the chair of the communication department, and I have been in academic institutions for much of my life, driven by the combination of the value of civic discourse and engagement, and also the sense that, you know, through advocacy and communication, we could help make the world safer and healthier, as Dr. Capps mentions. My background is very much steeped in community organizing and social justice threads. And when I got the chance to collaborate with Dr. Capps, who was at the heart of our work, and I'll say here, which was that Jen Capps was the first person to encourage this conversation and the first person who really reached out to put together academics and Project Rebound folks. Meeting with Project Rebound to help imagine, sketch out, and build the program really involved a lot of learning. And You know, the first thing we did was humble ourselves to ask how the College of the Redwoods was so successful with phenomenal GPA, great students, great completion rates, and engagement. And so we came up and observed. I taught a class with them. We went to their trainings. We listened. And I think that inverts a lot of the traditional community college university power relations. We really tried to make sure that they could guide us in our organizing. And so a lot of it for me was talking to the students themselves, finding out whether there was a real interest in this, connecting with them about their desires and needs, talking about employment futures, talking about what kind of role higher education and a four-year degree could play for students. And we serve students at a level four yard, which is the highest security yard in California. And so we're the only program in California where you can get a four-year BA degree at that level of security, which means many of the students have been incarcerated for a very long time. And that makes a both sort of challenges, but also amazing opportunities for folks who have been educating themselves and really making learning at the center of their story for oftentimes decades before we showed up. And that combination of, you know, excitement to learn, and as, you know, Dr. Capps mentions, the Project Rebound should students be released, the sort of access to bridge people to education and careers afterwards. I think the whole package is tied to safety and really a new way of thinking about human beings that traditionally may have been left out of the story of higher education.
Well, it sounds like you guys did your homework. Jen, it's your turn. Where'd your journey begin and what led you to where you are now?
Yeah, that I could take up your whole time slot on this one, but this is really something that I'm very, very passionate about. I'm trained as a counseling psychologist, and prior to entering higher education as a faculty member and then going into administration, my area of expertise really was on high-risk youth. So kids, I used to say kids that did really bad things, so those 18 to 24-year-olds. And I did a lot of this work in the state of Colorado prior to moving to California, but really looking at high-risk youth and kids that, committed violent crimes and those types of things, and then looking at rehabilitation options and understanding juvenile brain development and the impact of gang activity and how sentencing guidelines were handed down and how justice systems, how essentially they weren't very fair to Black, Indigenous, and people of color. And so been working to help inside prisons in the state of Colorado to help to rehabilitate and also to educate the courts about how to stop doing things like solitary confinement and how to engage and bring in education and rehabilitation programs and how that ultimately actually helps to increase community safety. And then there's been a number of Supreme Court actions that have changed broad sentencing guidelines, which have then come forward to the states to implement. And then, in fact, some of those changes in sentencing guidelines are impacting lengths of stay at Pelican Bay and other places, which are why we're starting to see a lot of different changes with respect to solitary confinement, the use of solitary confinement, the use of life without the possibility of parole for people who committed crimes under the age of 18, which incidentally, when we think about who's accessing education at Pelican Bay, there's significantly large populations of people, and oftentimes people of color who and men of color that, are in that 18 to 24 year old time frame where they potentially committed a crime and then are being incarcerated and have been there for many years and are really seeking a pathway out. So this work is significant, and I think I'm really excited that we have such good partners at Pelican Bay who are willing to, be partners with us in delivering this education and moving toward rehabilitation models that are seeing these just significant declines in violence, which has been and working toward better community safety.
Well, it sounds like education truly is the key. Jen, you mentioned something about the student demographics and the age range and their racial groups. Can you give me more about the student demographics and what's the expectation on the other side of this? I'm not sure I understand what their average time to release from prison is and what the expectation will be, or if they're just going to remain in prison and use their education in some other way.
Yeah, I mean, it varies greatly. And so with respect to sort of time to release, I think some folks are very much knocking on the door of potential parole dates, and the ability to access education helps them with respect to their potential for parole. But what I was speaking about with respect to demographics is it used to be in the United States that it was permissible to sentence people who committed crimes under the age of 18 to life without the possibility of parole. It's since been deemed unconstitutional by the United States Supreme Court, and there's been, you know, additional Supreme Court actions to help guide states in what do you do with people that were already sentenced to life without the possibility of parole prior to the Supreme Court changes. It wasn't retroactive, so states needed guidance on what to do with those folks. And so enter Pelican Bay. And so what you have is a number of individuals who are under that sort of old sentencing guideline and had been in solitary confinement for years and years, had no hope that they were ever going to be released from prison. And all of a sudden, the sentencing guidelines have changed, and lo and behold, have an opportunity to be released. And so why, you know, education is even more important than ever to offer them the tools to help to impact, you know, positivity within the prison, but also the ability when eventually they are released. When you look around at our cohort and when you look around at the demographics in prisons, especially in prisons like Pelican Bay, it is primarily Black, Brown, and Indigenous people. That's significant. And when you go back to looking at, you know, those demographics, that's generally, there's an overrepresentation of people of color, essentially.
Well, certainly your program and others are a benefit to the communities as well.
Absolutely. Significantly beneficial. And the thing that, you know, people, and there are definitely people that are seeking education that may never get out and sometimes get out of prison. And people say, well, why should they have access to education, or why is that beneficial? It's beneficial for a number of reasons. It's beneficial because it gives them something to work toward and help them to stay motivated and positive within the prison system, which helps the people who are working in the prison to be safer, other people who are incarcerated be safer. But most importantly, people who are incarcerated still have communication and connection with family, with friends, with the next generation. And that impact of them seeking education and bettering themselves has an impact on their kids, their aunts, their nieces and nephews, their grandkids. And that is incredibly significant and positive for community safety and happy and healthy families.
Maxwell, let's talk about the education crisis in prisons that your program is addressing. Tell me about the average educational level of the students who enroll in a prison education program.
Sure. All the students who enroll in our program basically began their voyage in either juvenile hall or prisons. And many of them were told, and they've shared this pretty honestly, you know, that in early years they were discouraged from being parts of schooling systems. They were kicked out of school, or disciplinary problems led them to what we would now call the school-to-prison pipeline. Almost all the students got their GEDs or found their educational pathway while they were incarcerated. Every single one of our students did. And then they basically fought for their own educational opportunities. And so, you know, you mentioned at the top of the broadcast the hunger strike of 2013, which was a moment where incarcerated folks advocated for themselves for access to programming and for the SHU, the solitary confinement, or sometimes called the SHU. And many of the programming that emerged came from organizing from incarcerated folks themselves statewide. And that drive means that when they did get access to programming, they were diving in wholeheartedly. And I'm not just talking about college classes. There's also self-help groups, AA groups, Gang Members Anonymous, all of the programming that's driven, meditation, all of those things that are oftentimes taught by folks who have been in prison for a long time. There are three members of our program that were parts of that hunger strike that have basically sacrificed of their own well-being in order to get education for the students. And that changes the tenor of a classroom, you know, where the students have know what the value and know what it means. They do their homework. They do the extra readings. They support each other. They encourage each other. And then once they got the access points from the College of the Redwoods to be able to take community college classes, many of them earned multiple AA degrees. In the classroom with, 23 students, I think we counted there were 425 years of incarceration. And more significantly, there were 36 AA degrees in that room, with at least two students who had earned three associate's degrees, because that was the highest level of education they could get. And so they just kept going back for whatever learning was possible. And when we think about human beings with potential, this is a population that I think has been not necessarily understood as something that could really contribute to our society. And I'm not making arguments that against accountability, but I am saying that there's a value and a drive there that I think has something to contribute to our communities. And many of these guys, I would like to see taxpaying citizens, neighbors, and community members giving back to the world.
My guests are Cal Poly Humboldt Professor Maxwell Schnurr and Cal Poly's Provost and VP of Academic Affairs, Jen Capps. We're talking about Cal Poly's bachelor degree program offered at Pelican Bay State Prison, along with a federal financial aid package to cover costs. And I want to get into that federal financial aid package, but before I do, I keep hearing this common denominator. And that, to me, it sounds like this is a humanitarian and education issue that begins before these men are in prison. Jen, how many other colleges and degree programs are offered in California state prisons, and what sets Cal Poly apart?
There are actually a number of different I don't know the exact number, but there are a number of different colleges and universities that offer prison education programs. I think what sets us apart are a couple of things. One is our rich partnership with College of the Redwoods. I think the second piece is the ability to offer a bachelor's program in a level 4 yard, which Maxwell mentioned is the most secure highest level security in a prison in California. So we're creating access to education in a space within prisons that hasn't been offered before. And so that's significant. And the third thing I'm going to say is that we went into this extremely humble. We were very, very slow, methodical, and humble, and worked very closely with the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation to make sure that we got this right with respect to centering what the needs that the CDCR identified as really important. We've sought to make sure that we center those relationships with Pelican Bay, as well as the people who are incarcerated. So asking them what it is that would be of value to them, and then building our academic programming with that in mind. And really, that's what we do at Cal Poly Humboldt, is to be very student-centered, regardless of who our students are, if they are in prison or if they are on our campus.
So you were learning from your students how best to provide for their needs?
Absolutely.
So yep. Given this contributing factor of illiteracy that seems to be common among the incarcerated, is there a network of high schools and colleges that are working together on the prevention side of this equation?
That is a great question. And I'm sure that there's a number of different, there are a number of different groups that work together to try to do more preventative programming, to try to intervene. And in fact, a lot, previous to being in administration and even in higher ed, would work on programs. They were intended to really try to support and keep kids in school, kids at home. So a lot of times when kids have a first initial interaction with the juvenile justice system, in the past it was to attempt to justice involve them more, to, you know, put them on probation, to do a lot of kind of consequencing. When kids get in trouble at school, it was to suspend them and pull them out of school, which then would interrupt their ability to pursue and stay, you know, up to date with education. And so there's been a lot of transformative models to think about how do you flip the script on that? And really, rather than pull kids away from the things that, like education, like being at home, how do you build services around the school setting or around the home setting to be able to support and keep them there, rather than having them leave those settings? So, and so there's been good work in doing that. And I think what we've seen is reductions in time in prison and more investment in some of these preventative or even intervention types of programs. Although what I will say is sometimes it's difficult to get the attention of folks to say this is really where we need to put our resources. Sometimes it's not until the bad thing happens that folks go, oh my, we probably do need to put some resources toward this.
Right. That's really unfortunate, but it is the society we live in. Max, I've got a couple of minutes left here. Talk about the program in step-by-step fashion from the point of view of the student, and talk about this federal financial aid package and the benefits of that.
Sure. Well, I mean, the access to the Pell Grant is a huge equalizer for many of the students who are, of course, working class. Many of them are struggling to gain access to education otherwise, and might even be at risk for prey for sort of for-profit institutions that might put them further into debt or even make it difficult for them to get access. From the student perspective, I'll name that the students have to study in less than ergonomic spaces. They have limited access to Wi-Fi, but they make it work. They support each other. They share readings. They collaborate. When a student falls behind, they work as impromptu sort of tutoring sessions. And we really strive to bring as much of Humboldt to these students as possible. So I'm really proud of the fact that they had the first incarcerated scholars conference, and our Pelican Bay students kicked off the conference with an astounding hour-long, first time really ever broadcast out of Pelican Bay, live and uncensored, with their perspective on why education is important to them in their own words. We've had three dedicated career workshops at this point with community members, including the director of public health, a communication department, Cal Poly alumni coming up, the academic and career center at Humboldt coming to Pelican Bay to help with resumes, cover letters, job searching. We had two guest lectures at this point. And again, the program is basically a year old at this point, but we're trying to bring as much of a university education without too much compromise, whenever, you know, really trying to make it meaningful and sincere. And I think that's a big part of it, which is treating them as human beings with agency and capability and taking from where they bring it, which is really a blessing to be in this space with them.
Well, we really appreciate the work that you do. As I said before, there's this common denominator, humanitarianism and education. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Thank you, Maxwell and Jen, for joining the exchange today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.